From Paris and Dublin to Moscow and Memphis, no matter where you are, it's Texas Standard Time on this Wednesday, July 5th, 2017. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us. There's nothing quite like rubbing your eyes after a long holiday weekend and reading that North Korea has launched an ICBM. Been a long time since ICBMs were part of daily news headlines, so a refresher may be in order. That's the acronym for Intercontinental Ballistic Missile, typically understood as a guided missile with a range of at least 3,400 miles. North Korea demonstrated its new transcontinental capability with a statement from the North Korean president saying of the Americans, quoting here, "I guess they're not too happy with the gift package we sent them for the occasion of their Independence Day. We should often send them gift packages so they won't be too bored." Intriguingly and somewhat theatrically, North Korea's news agency said Mr. Kim made those remarks with a guffaw. Experts believe that though the ICBM could probably reach Alaska, Pyongyang still lacks the technology for a nuclear warhead to fit on an ICBM. William M. Bowden is a professor at the LBJ School of Public Affairs and a veteran of strategic planning on the NSC at the White House. Professor, welcome.
Always happy to do it, David.
This is a developing story, obviously. Initial reports earlier this week said that North Korea had tested an intermediate-range missile, but now reports, and apparently confirmed by the People's Republic, they've successfully launched a two-stage intercontinental ballistic missile. Is that a paradigm shift is overused, but is this a game changer?
Absolutely, it's a game changer. Yeah, and the key distinction here is now for the first time, North Korea seems to have developed a missile capability that could directly hit parts of the United States. This was always our fear. Previously, the shorter range missiles they had tested would be ones that could hit Japan, South Korea, some of our island bases like Guam in the Pacific.
I noticed, I think everyone did, the State Department, the Pentagon, the White House spending much of its 4th of July in meetings on how to respond. What options are open to the U.S. at this point if it chose to do something unilaterally?
Well, there's no good options. That's the first hard truth dealing with North Korea that every policymaker and scholar will tell you. It's really about sitting down and looking at a series of bad options and perhaps choosing the least bad one. North Korea's main leverage is the artillery and rocket batteries that they have pointed at Seoul, which is just, you know, some 20, 25 miles south of the border there. So it's almost like they can hold Seoul hostage with a gun pointed right at Seoul's head. And then North Korea's other perverse leverage is they're ruled by Kim Jong-un, whose only concern is maintaining his hold on power. And so he doesn't care at all if his people suffer tremendous economic hardship or famine. And so some of the traditional tools of statecraft, like economic sanctions or diplomatic isolation or even military threats, are much less effective against the North Koreans.
Does the UN play a role here? I mean, we noticed that Nikki Haley, the UN ambassador, was calling on for the United Nations to issue some blunt statement, and it appears that the Secretary General did so. But what difference does it make?
Yeah, the UN has been only modestly effective with North Korea. There have been times in the past where we've been able to get the UN Security Council to issue a, you know, strongly worded resolution and even put together some fairly robust multilateral sanctions. But the problem in the UN is that Russia and especially China are both permanent members of the Security Council and they have vetoes. Mm-hmm. And China in particular has often acted as North Korea's protector and heat shield and watered down statements, watered down the sanctions. And so there's only so much the UN can do as long as China continues to be North Korea's main protector.
I think Donald Trump probably thought that China, based on its statements, would play more of a role in trying to get North Korea to tamp down its actions. That apparently has been unsuccessful, at least in the mind of President Trump, who quickly tweeted a response after the launch and then again today. Trade between China and North Korea grew almost 40% in the first quarter. So much for China working with us, but we had to give it a try. So sort of a quid pro quo on security in the Korean Peninsula. Is that what he was intimating there?
That seems to be. And again, you know, President Trump is learning the same lesson that his predecessors going back to Bill Clinton and then President George W. Bush and then President Obama all learned fairly soon after taking office is that China is just not very willing to put the kind of pressure on North Korea that it would need to change their behavior. And every American president in the modern era has come into office hoping for more from China, and everyone has been disappointed. And President Trump is just the latest.
Well, so the president is off to Europe. He's going to be meeting in Poland, the start of the G20. Does North Korea factor into any of this larger conversation as it sort of as the president takes on the world stage here?
I'm sure it will, especially given that President Xi Jinping from China will be there, Prime Minister Abe from Japan, President Moon from South Korea. But the G20 already had a very crowded agenda with a lot of other major international issues. And so I think it's going to be hard for the North Korea challenge to get all the attention it might deserve in the G20. And of course, the real question on so many people's minds is how will President Trump's first meeting with Vladimir Putin in his capacity as president of the United States go? So we're all anxious to see what will happen there.
Former strategic planning director at the NSC, he is now a professor at the LBJ School of Public Affairs and executive director of the Clements Center for National Security at the University of Texas at Austin, William Imboden. Professor Imboden, thank you so much for speaking again with the Texas Standard.
Thanks, David. Always happy to do it.